as I wait.
Heart of God. Welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you go deeper with Sunday's teaching, both in your small group and in your individual walk with the Lord. This week, we are wrapping up our series on Jesus' disciples, Jesus' 12 ordinary men who he called to be something more than ordinary, called to greater things, called to be his not only disciples and followers, but also his apostles, those whom he would use to set the foundations of the church, and who would be scared out of their wits on the night of Good Friday before being empowered to go do those mighty acts of valor and trusting in the Lord and following his spirit post-Pentecost. It's going to be really fun to meet these guys someday, don't you think?
It is. And it's really interesting that as we come to the end of this, having looked at five, we originally intended to look at six, but for reasons that we all know, we changed what we did last week. And just to look at the fact that really, although there is no distinction made really about within the 12, although there's three that are very close to Jesus, or maybe four, depending on you read, that they were a group of 12 people, but really a lot of them we know very little about.
I have to kind of piece suppositions together from one or two passages here and there.
But it reveals to us really that what we're reading is more about what Jesus was Jesus is training of them and teaching of them than it is about.
Or I would argue it's more about Jesus than it is about those who are around him. The Gospels are not a book about leadership development.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination. They're the book about the Son of God and his claim on us and the way in which he went about that claim or took that claim through his
and the way in which
death
he,
on the cross.
And as he reacted with these people, he clearly trained them to be sent by him.
Right. And what I find, I questioned whether I should include this as one of the questions this week, and I didn't. But I think that it makes your point perfectly. In John 17, Jesus' high priestly prayer, I'm not remembering the verse now, but he says to the Father, I have done all that you have sent me here to do because I have manifested myself and I have made you known to these people.
Yes.
That's what he says. Like, he explains his purpose for coming in the fact that he has communicated a knowledge of himself to these 12
guys.
Or 11, minus the son of perdition. That's fascinating to me. Whenever, Jesus takes on a purpose statement like that. Super important.
And he says, he phrases it in the same way as he phrases so many of the other things. I've done what you asked me to do.
Yeah. I have it here. I have manifested your name to the people whom you have given me out of the world. Now they know everything that you have given me is from you, for I have given them the words that you gave me, and they received them and have come to know the truth that I came from you, and they have believed that you sent me. He explains how central those 12 guys were to his purpose. And I think that we often oversimplify Jesus' purpose for coming in his death and resurrection, which honestly, I kind of just did a moment ago, when he says, a large part of my purpose for coming was to establish the church through these guys. Really interesting. We've given nicknames to them, to these guys. Jesus was in the habit of handing out nicknames. I'll call this guy a rock. I'll call these guys bone energies. We, or you, I would say, took your shot at nicknames as well this week, and that's the title of our first question, which I will read now. Nicknames. We've given each of the disciples we've looked at in this series a nickname. James, the brother of John, Philip, the bean counter, Andrew, the significantly insignificant, Nathaniel, the forthright, Peter, the impulsive, and, for extra credit, John, the transformed. Each disciple had a unique personality. Each disciple was challenged, called, and equipped to become the best version of themselves. Reflect on the nicknames we've given each disciple and consider how each encapsulates the central story of their transformation.
Mm.
Now, the one I don't understand, it almost seems like a throwaway name, and defend yourself, is the first one, James, the brother of John. Is there purpose to simply latching him to his brother there, or maybe had you not gotten to the swing of things of throwing a title that was like, you know, mildly provocative?
I think it's probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
I think that one of the points that we made about James was that James was almost certainly John's elder brother, but he didn't behave like that.
There are a lot of episodes in which the two of them do something
right together. And you don't hear very much about, you hear less about James, ultimately.
As an individual.
As an individual. And I think that's what, that his identity, in a sense, his identity in the Gospels is almost as the brother of John.
And so
I think that's where I started. And then I looked a bit further on and thought, okay, maybe I'm going to change these a bit.
Right. Because there's an assertiveness to him, which one wouldn't expect in someone who's simply defined in his connection to another.
Right.
Because he's Boanerges, because he's, you know, demanding to sit on Jesus's left or his right side,
right.
You know, but.
And it's interesting because we didn't actually get to look at John, because of there is that connection that you have to
It's interesting that, like, you know, James and John asked to sit on Jesus' left and right side, and yet on two occasions at least in the Gospels, John was in fact sitting on Jesus' left or right side at the Passover meal. Are there any other comments you would make on these nicknames?
No, I think that it's interesting because I would say, you know, take some time to look at John sometime, because most people would say that they would expect me to have called him the beloved disciple or the loved one or something like that. And I'm not sure. I think that in preparing these sermons, what struck me most was that John was Boanerges. I was looking forward to being able to use that to use Boanerges again. But yet when he comes to, because we actually see him get really old. He's the only disciple that doesn't end up being martyred, but he gets really, really old. And I don't know whether it's tradition or certain that he was the pastor of the church in Ephesus, and they carried, and towards the end of his life, they carried him into the church because he was
so old. And one of his disciples was Polycarp, who was then
who says some really wonderful things about him.
Yeah, which is fascinating that we have the writings of someone who was a disciple of someone who was
a disciple.
A disciple of Jesus. Yeah,
yeah,
so
and,
awesome.
And so John definitely, I mean, if you read John's writing, he is so characterized by love, but in the first half of his life, he was a firebrand. He was wanting to call down the
which we wouldn't think of as a loving thing to do. Yeah,
certainly not if you're wanting to call down fire on a Samaritan village. You're not being terribly loving.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our second question is simply called the 12. It's a question about titles. We learned early on in this series that disciples are those who be with Jesus, become like Jesus, and do what Jesus did. Does this help simplify for you what it means to be a Christian? Mark 3:14 provides another interesting detail about titles for Jesus' 12. He appointed 12, whom he also named apostles. The word apostle means sent one. What would change for you in your Christian life if you were to think of your identity as, I am a disciple and I am an apostle?
Well, hopefully it would draw your attention to the statement that we've been making, that we are sent and sending others to be disciples and make disciples. Because, you know, there's a lot of sort of people who talk about apostles and say, you know, the apostles, there are never going, in a sense, because Jesus had 12 apostles, there can never be any more.
Yes, that's why I feel mildly uncomfortable with the way that I finish this question. I am an apostle. I'm like, oh, what did I know?
Well, I'd like to...
Challenge me on that.
Challenge the fact that you're discomfort.
Yeah.
Because of what you say in your question.
I am a sent one. I'll agree with that.
Right. And Paul says here,
Ephesians 4.
He says that some apostles, and I think that's, and I mean, I think that the apostle, the gift of the apostle or the calling of the apostle is to be sent, to be a sort of entrepreneur, to be
there
somebody who is...
There are a set of characteristics which apostles have, just like there are a set of characteristics which evangelists have.
Right. I think church planters in many ways could be called apostles.
But I would, you know, challenge you right back on that point and to say, all right, if God has in fact gifted people in the church to be apostles today, and we might call those people church planters, what right do I have to say that I am an apostle if, in fact, maybe I haven't been given that set of gifts? So that's kind of why I feel uncomfortable with the way that it's phrased.
I think that's fine, David. I think, mm-hmm. because I don't know that I'm an apostle. I think, in a sense, if you take it,
I could
down
say you're apostle and shepherd.
If you bear it down to its barest meaning of being sent,
yes,
then we are all apostles.
Yes.
But I think the apostolic gift is probably, because I think that there are gifts of the apostles, the prophets, the whatever. That doesn't mean I can never, if I'm, there's a gift of being that.
Right.
As opposed to, but we're all, in a sense, sent.
And there's, you know, lower A apostle and upper A, capital letter A apostle as well. Like, there are 12 apostles, period. And yet, Luke will go on in the book of Acts and call Barnabas an apostle. Mm-hmm. Whoa, like we're breaking some rules when we say that. And then, of course, you know, Paul the apostle as well is the title he claims for himself in all of his letters.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we get
hung up on these
things. Yeah, we do. And hung up rather than
terminological warfare.
Right. I know somebody who said, I've heard people say, oh, that calling people apostles is the straight from the pit of hell. And I think to myself, really? I think the fact that we get hung up about those things is probably something which amuses the evil one somewhat.
Yeah, yeah. And if you read the letters of 1st and 2nd Timothy, you'll find Paul cautioning Timothy away from those kind of controversies.
Right.
Our third question is called call narrative. In biblical studies, scholars use the term call narrative to talk about how characters in the Bible were called into God's service or into a relationship with Him. Think of some famous call narratives like Abraham, Moses, Isaiah, Paul. We've spent a lot of time on call narratives of the disciples in this series. What is your call narrative? What persons and events did God use to both bring you to a saving knowledge of Himself and also to direct you toward fruitful service for Him?
Good question.
It's fun to think of call narratives in the Bible. Those little parenthetical examples, I think I had fun just throwing them together in a lesson. Think of Abraham's call narrative, called out of Ur, you know, and the great faith it took for him to follow that call, a faith that is, you know, championed and celebrated by Paul in Book of Galatians.
And then you've got
Romans.
Moses.
The burning bush.
Burning bush.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Isaiah being brought into the throne room of God,
right,
and his tongue being touched by
a coal.
And, you know, Paul being knocked off of the horse, if in fact he was riding one at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting, the way in which God.
And it's interesting because, as somebody said to me, you know, those people he had to call because a whisper wouldn't do. You know, he had to get their attention in a dramatic way for all sorts of different ways.
Right.
God had to yell at Paul by knocking him onto the ground.
And others, you know, a whisper is sufficient. I forget what female disciple in the book of Acts this is about. Maybe it's Lydia, who says that God opened her heart to listen to the Apostle Paul. That's all that was necessary. Just giving her an inclination to respond to the possibility of the truth behind
David, that you talk about a female apostle, a female disciple there, you know?
I was like, am I saying this the right way? I'm just going to keep on talking, but yeah, go ahead and identify the awkwardness of that sentence. Call attention to it. What is our call narrative? I mean, we all have one. We've all been called, not as dramatic as others, but all divine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Part of the fact that we are unique children of God.
I'm encouraged to know that you will have talked about the other six apostles as well in your sermon. And that's what we've titled our last question, the other six. We've only had time in this series, I'm contradicting myself now, we've only had time in this series to look at half of Jesus' disciples. Let's take a quick look at the other half in this last question of the series. We do not know very much about Thaddeus or James, the son of Alphaeus. Matthew, the tax collector, and Simon the Zealot we know only through their titles. That leaves Thomas and Judas Iscariot. From the handful of references provided and their unique titles, what can we learn from their lives, both characteristics to emulate and actions to avoid?
It's interesting. The only one I won't I didn't mention was Judas Iscariot.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a
villain.
There's some really interesting things that you discover about them, and you discover that Matthew, his father's name was Alphaeus too, so perhaps James was his brother. We don't know.
And that means as well that they're both probably well-to-do, you know, wealthy disciples.
Right.
Matthew certainly had to give up so much.
He should give up his business, Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector, whereas Matthew was in a booth. He was therefore probably one of the most hated people.
Because he's the figurehead.
He's the figurehead. You know, Zacchaeus was behind
the oppressive system.
But so I read somewhere that's really interesting that Jesus encounters three tax collectors and they all get saved.
It's just like a non-named.
It's an unnamed one who goes up to the house to pray. Yes, goes up to the house to pray.
Yeah, 16 or whatever it is, 1816.
Yeah. He goes up to the
beats his chest and says, "I'm unworthy."
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
And
wouldn't it be cool if that was actually Matthew? That parable's told about him.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Anyways.
But he called Matthew. Obviously Matthew was at his, even though he was a social pariah to the Jews, he obviously was loved his faith, and he knew his faith, because if you look at his gospel, his is the most Jewish gospel of them all. And then you have, of course, you know, he was cooperating with the Romans, and then you've got Simon the Zealot, how those two lived in the same house is difficult to understand.
Do you want to explain for our listeners, I'm sure you already did on Sunday, the meaning of a zealot and who zealots are?
Well, I think this may be a slight exaggeration, but probably the best way of Simon the Terrorist. Because they actively...
Terrorist against whom?
Against the Romans.
Yes.
He was an...
guerrilla warfare.
Yeah, they would kill people. They believed that the only viable king for Israel was God.
It could be that those who were hanging beside Jesus on the cross were zealots.
It quite well could be. Barabbas, I think, was a zealot.
Yeah.
And they would stop at nothing to. Because they believed that God was the only viable ruler for Israel, and anybody who was was in a position of authority over Israel, that it was okay to kill him.
Yeah, I mean, they got the first part of that from the Hebrew Scriptures. The second part, they made up for themselves.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And then there was James, there's another James. He was James the less in some places.
Whether this is that the son of Alphaeus, brother of Matthew. Yeah.
Whether he was smaller than the others, we don't really know. Uh-huh. Or whether it was just because he was quiet and did less. Compared to the other James, we don't really know,
is there anything, I haven't done my research here, that makes us know for certain that the James that was martyred was James the son of Zebedee and not this James?
I don't know.
Everything
I've read says that it was the son of Zebedee.
Anyways, not massively important at all. All right.
There's some interesting historical stories about Thaddeus and going to, I can't remember about where he went after the, and then he was supposedly.
Oh, here we are. Acts chapter 12, he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword.
Right.
But then, in Acts 15, James has the most to say in the debate about whether Gentiles should be.
Yeah, now that's James, the half-brother of John, the half-brother of Jesus.
Oh, and not even one of the disciples.
No.
Okay, so that isn't James the lesser in that case.
No, that's James. That's James, the half-brother of Jesus, who ends up writing the book of James.
Yeah. Gosh, why did everyone have to have their name James? Why is it such a popular name back then? It's so confusing.
And none of them were called Jim.
I know, please. All right, is there anything else that you'd like us to leave us with this series?
I think it's such fun to realize that Jesus chose 12 very ordinary people.
Flawed individuals.
And they were such a ragtail bunch. Mm. Mm. And yet, he founded his church. Mm. That gives us great hope, I think.
Well, we have a very important next few weeks coming, the Advent series, and then the 21 Days in Prayer Fasting following that. Mm-hmm. Do you have a direction as to what's happening in February?
Yes, probably. We're going to look at A Tale of Two Marriages.
Oh, very cool. Mary and Joseph. Yeah. And
then you're going to preach on the Incarnation.
Yes, looking forward to that.
And then we're going to, I think, during the 21 Days of Prayer and Fasting, we're going to go back to our series on the Psalms and do a couple of Psalms.
Okay.
And then after that, in all likelihood, we're going to do a series that surrounds a book called Saturate.
Right.
Which I'll tell you more about.
Well, I hope you're ready to get wet with spiritual goodness. All right, well, it's been great talking with you, and we will see you next week.
As I wait.